Welcome to Influential She, the podcast about accelerating the influence of women in the world.
You will find us to be a fresh voice in an old conversation.
And here we are, your amazing co-hosts, Deb Soholt
and Mel Schopp. Well, welcome back, everyone, to this episode of Influential She. And this is our conversation about accelerating the influence of women in the world. And I'm your co-host, Mel Schopp.
And I'm Deb Soholt. And oh my gosh, we are so excited today because, Mel, this is like our very first sponsored podcast. And we are just so excited. And it's being sponsored today by Dr. Vance Thompson and his wife, Jana Thompson. And they are just so excited about Influential She and the messages that we are trying to promote to the world and how we're wanting to accelerate the influence of women. So they just decided that they wanted to help us with our podcast. Dr. Vance is actually an ophthalmologist and Jana is an entrepreneur working side by side. They're partners together in multiple entrepreneurial ventures. So they really understand also what it's like to do a startup. And so we're just so grateful to Dr. Vance and Jana for sponsoring our podcast today. And today we're going to be digging into our high leverage practice of as if. Leveraging and acting as if.
You know, so there's been so many times, I think, when I'm looking back and in the conversations you and I've had, Deb, we kind of stood around and waited for permission, that permission, whether it was going to be the next part of speaking or acting or thinking or moving forward in our careers, rather than just, you know, forging ahead. And you know, we took those baby steps rather than being brazen about the potential that we really had.
And really just kind of moving into that position of, we're not in the space we want to be in, but we're acting as if we could be in that space. So that was all kinds of new learning that really helped us to change how we could leverage our influence.
Yeah. And, reality is this, that sometimes what our current life situation is requires that we do remain in the spots that we're at, whether it is because of our spouses or a significant other is in one spot or our children that make those determinations, but still the capacity to think about, you know, the potential is that I could possibly do is what I think our guest is going to talk to us about today.
Well, let's get right to our guest because she's like fantastic and amazing. And we're so excited to have this conversation. We want to welcome Tracy McArdle. She is actually the general manager of the Good Life Wine Collective in California in Napa Valley. And this is an operation that's really family owned. There's three different labels of wine. And Tracy, welcome to the show. And why don't you tell us a little bit about the three different labels that you represent as a GM?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you so much. What an honor it is to be on the show. You guys are amazing. And I love everything that you're doing. We're just so excited to be a part of it. We have three different, you can say labels they're essentially three different wineries. But Jessup Cellars, Handwritten Wines, and Humanitas Wines. I'll kind of start with Jessup Cellars. The very first vintage was 1996. And early on, it was owned by the Jessup family and they're from Napa. And three of our current owners actually decided to invest in the winery really early on, so the late 90s. And then throughout the course of the next coming years, they actually ended up taking over ownership of the winery. And so Jessup Cellars has been in with the Thompsons, the Blues, and the Eisemingers, who are three of the current owners. They've been within the families for close to 20 years now. So it's a really amazing, amazing winery that is just so near and dear to so many hearts. I think now we're close to 6,500 wine club members, and that spans across the entire country, which is just so exciting. You know, we have this beautiful tasting room here in the Napa Valley that people come and they enjoy such a wonderful experience. They end up joining the wine club and then they just really become part of our lives. And it's such a moving and a touching experience. And the fact that we get to really be a part of their lives and whether it's celebrations or different occasions. And we try very, very hard, to build a culture within the company that starts with connection. And so we really cherish, you know, one another in terms of all the employees, but that carries through to what we have in the relationships that we build with our members and with our customers as well. And Jessup Sellers really was the start of everything. And if you fast forward to about 2009, that was the very first vintage of handwritten wines. And it is such a beautiful winery, but the wines are absolutely exquisite. Cabernet Sauvignon focused.
And we like Cab.
You do? Yes. Me too. We're in the Valley of Cabernet Sauvignon here in the Napa Valley. Cab is king. And it's so interesting because with handwritten, what we've done, there are 16 different districts or ABAs, they call them. And each one is distinctly different in terms of what they call the terroir. And terroir is really it speaks to the land, to really everything that goes into making a wine and how that ultimately is going to end up tasting. And so what we do with handwritten wines is we take you on a tour of all the various districts of the Napa Valley. And you go from tasting a Cabernet that's grown in the very southernmost point of the valley, all the way up to the northernmost point of the valley. And those two, and it's Cabernet Sauvignon. So both of them are 100% Cab, and yet they taste distinctly different. And that's because they're grown in these really unique areas.
So it sounds like we have to take a field trip down in the near future.
Absolutely. How excited you are about all of the things that you're involved in, Tracy.
So, you know, Tracy, I think the reason this speaks to us is we do have this connection that we felt with you right away. We jokingly say that a lot of the brilliant ideas we come up with throughout Influential She were over a bottle of excellent wine. So now we know that we have to expand our palate, but we know that most of them have been Cabernets. And you say it so eloquently. I think I'm just always going to call it Cabernet because I can't say the Sauvignon.
The Sauvignon.
As articulately.
It took me years to get it down.
Well, you've got it down.
Tracy. Thank you.
You know, we in talking to you before this podcast, we know that you came from, you know, information decision science, and you worked in the world of finance. You actually were a collegiate golfer.
In Chicago.
You were in the Windy City, and now you are this, you know, passionate wine person in Napa Valley, but not only just passionate about wine, you're the general manager with incredible responsibility. How in the world did that happen to you?
Well, it really is it's an incredible journey that I've been on, and I'm so appreciative to be here and to be a part of this whole thing. So I grew up in Chicago. So I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, and I absolutely love that city. But you know, played golf kind of growing up, but Chicago is not very conducive for really working on your golf game, given that the fact that you've got great weather for 3 months out of the year,
exactly.
And the other months are So I decided to actually go down to the University of Central Florida in Orlando. Wanted to pursue golf and see how far that could take me. So I played for UCF for 3 years on the golf team, and I think ultimately it was a fantastic experience. But I got pretty burned out on golf, and I decided that I could go on and I could become maybe a club pro. I wasn't good enough to actually get onto the LPGA, but I decided that, you know what? I love golf, but I think it's going to become just a hobby. And I think I'm actually going to pursue something a little bit different. So I went back to Chicago and I finished my degree in information decision sciences.
So information decision sciences, it sounds really interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's so funny. And to be quite honest with you, I decided I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. And I knew that if I got a degree, and this was information decision sciences is basically computer science and business.
Okay.
So together. So, you know, I took all the business courses, but then I also had to take all the wonderful programming courses and the computer science side of it, which was definitely, you know, incredibly challenging. but ultimately graduated and ended up getting into the banking industry. And so I was really more on the technology side, but then worked for two different banks for throughout the course of my 20s for about 10 years. And, you know, I definitely learned quite a bit. I learned that that was an industry that, while I learned a lot, I think the most important thing I did learn was that I didn't want to do it for the long term. And I ultimately wasn't passionate about it. And I would wake up in the morning and, you know, I just could feel that it just wasn't ultimately what I wanted to do with my life. And, you know, the one thing I can take from it though, was I actually learned about wine throughout the course of working for the different banks. And really it was because I didn't know a thing about wine, and I was having to go to dinners and having to, you know, entertain clients or, you know, go out to dinner with my bosses and so forth. And everybody knew about wine. And so I figured, oh my gosh, well, if I'm going to do this, I've got to be able to speak, you know, talk the talk. And so there was a little wine shop that was right around the corner from my condo in Chicago. And my sister and I decided, okay, let's learn about wine. And so both of us just started taking some informal classes, and we just absolutely fell in love with wine. And really there's so many nuances. You know, we talked about Cabernet Sauvignon being grown, you know, it's the exact same grape just grown in two different areas, and what a significant change and difference that can, and impact that has on the actual final result of the wine. And so it was really fun. And it was something that, we enjoyed in terms of having it be a hobby. And so, you know, as I was kind of having this sort of, you know, not crisis, but thinking to myself, okay, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? I sat down and I had lunch with my dad, and I'll never forget this. We were sitting there and we were having a glass of wine, and he said, "Trey, what do you really love? Is there something that inspires you? Are you passionate about something?" And I literally looked down at this glass of wine and I'm like, "My gosh, Dad, it's wine!" And so right then and there, just the light switch went off in my head, and or I should say went on in my head. I said, "Okay, how do I do this? I have no experience in the wine industry. You know, I've taken some very informal classes, but I'm not quite sure how to even get my foot in the door." So I had a friend who worked for a distributor in Chicago, and I took him out to lunch and I just, you know, picked his brain and said, "How do I get into the industry?" And he said, "You know, to be honest with you, go to the Napa Valley." He said, if you go to Napa and you can network and you can learn as much as you possibly can about wine, when you come back to Chicago, you will be really desirable from an employment standpoint. He said, right now it's going to be a little difficult because you just don't have the experience. So I thought to myself, okay. Can I really do this? Can I uproot my life? I mean, I had owned a condo in Chicago, and, you know, I had been on this path where I was, you know, planning on, you know, in the banking industry and so forth. And, you know, it was something in me just, I knew I had to pursue it. I knew I had to go, and I made the decision. Yes, I'm going to do this. And whether or not I fail, you know, if I go to Napa and then I come back and it's not something that works out, then at least I tried. At least I gave it a go.
And Tracy, wasn't this like, you know, kind of your first major, in a way you were starting to act as if just when you were drinking wine and learning about wine, like I'm sure you weren't saying to these colleagues that you're having dinners with, "Well, I don't know anything about this." So you were just like going along with it, but then you were trying to learn behind the scenes.
Fake it till you make it, for sure.
Yeah, but then you, when you went to Napa, tell that story of just making your way up and down the valley, acting as if you belonged in that space.
Oh, for sure. So when I initially came out here, again, without any experience, you know, I had a resume that was all technology and banking, you know. And so what I did was I took all these various projects that I worked on within the banking industry, and I basically wrote out the project. And then I wrote how that project and what I learned could have an impact in a tasting room, could have an impact on wine in this particular way and so forth. And so I just kind of redesigned my resume so that it could at least seem a little bit more desirable from that standpoint. And I went up and down the valley, both Sonoma Valley and the Napa Valley, and truly just walked in places, gave them my resume. And, you know, it definitely was, when you don't have any experience at something, and it's kind of like, okay, I have to at least pretend like I have the confidence to be able to go into these places and pretend like I know what I'm doing and know what I'm talking about. But to be honest with you, it was nerve wracking, you know, but I definitely knew I had to have confidence. I had to at least go in there and pretend like I knew what I was doing. So I did, I can't even tell you how many different wineries. And this is the God honest truth. When I walked into Jessup Cellars, I knew right away that that was the place that I wanted to work. And, you know, I had tasted a lot of various wines, all through Sonoma Valley, through the Napa Valley. And so that was the one thing. Wine is so incredible. And there were a lot of places that had really good wine. What it really came down to about Jessup Cellars was the people. I cannot tell you how I felt like I was stepping into my living room in Chicago. You know, the people were just so hospitable and they smiled and they were so friendly. And I knew the moment I walked in there and the moment I left that that was the place that I wanted to work. And so, you know, I pretty much kind of banged on the door and said, you know, please, can I just have an interview? And so the GM agreed to interview me, and we had a great time. It was a fantastic interview. And at the end of the interview, he said, you know, it's been such a joy meeting you. We don't have anything available right now, but we definitely will keep your resume on file. And we'll give you a call. And so, you know, after that, I walked out and I kind of, you know,
We've
all heard that before. Yeah. It's going in the file.
Exactly. Yep. Going in the file. And then about 2 hours later, I get a phone call. It's a 707, which is the area code here, 707 area code. And I thought, oh my gosh, who could this be? And I answered the phone and it was the GM. And he said, you know what, Tracy? I just enjoyed our interview so much. I talked with the owners and we feel like you would be a huge asset to bring you into the winery and into the tasting room. And we want to actually make a job for you. And I literally, had this feeling. I was so overjoyed and I couldn't believe it. And, you know, talk about that fake it till you make it. I mean, but it really came true. And I think, you know, to a large degree, it was, you know, having the confidence to walk in somewhere and know that you really want that job and really be persistent. And, you know, when it actually came to fruition, it was one of the greatest feelings, and I'll never forget that. So that was 11 years ago.
Yeah, you know, this is exactly, Tracy, what we talk about, you know, leveraging as if we're, you know, you didn't sit around and just wait for something to happen or wait for success to come, because it would be pretty easy to say, I'm just going to wait until I get all this built up on my resume, and then I'm just going to wait. You authored your destiny. I mean, you were just, you know, it was determination, but a lot of it was just saying, you know what, I've got this capability. I can do this. You envisioned how you were going to get there, and then you made it happen. And that's exactly, you know, sort of the encouragement that we're trying to give to other women, where sometimes it just seems like, oh my gosh, this is just impossible, or I'm going to have to wait until. You definitely didn't get caught up in that mindset. Instead, just kept moving ahead.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. I think it's easy to get, it's easy to let, you know, if somebody says no to something, or if you know, whatever the case may be, where you just feel like, okay, this can't happen, change that mindset, you know, because this is something that you absolutely, it can happen. and that's part of the whole process. And I think having, you know, there's a, like we said, a small degree of make it till you fake or fake it till you make it.
Exactly.
But then ultimately, yeah, ultimately, you know, you take the reins and really you can drive the process and you know, I think that, you know, you have the confidence to stand your ground or to be able to say, this is something I want and how am I going to get there and take help along the way. You know, I think that was a big thing and it's some realize that, you know, sometimes you can't get things done necessarily on your own and having others help you along the way is a big part of that process too, and accepting that help, because it's, I think, you know, we live in a world where if we all really helped each other a little bit more and really increase that sort of mindset, we can go so much further. So,
exactly.
You know, Tracy, when you talked about, I think it was such a good example of as if, when you said, all right, I've got this resume that just doesn't like read to whine, but
right.
I can reframe it to not
right.
be disingenuous and not misrepresent myself in any way, but taking
yep.
what I do know that I know and representing in a way to make it relevant. And
right.
I think that's just such an important lesson because, you know, to Mel's point, you know, many times I see women, we both have talked about this a lot. We see women kind of holding back saying, ooh, I've got to have that all tied up in a bow. I have to have that really ready to go.
Right.
I'm just not feeling like I am in that space
right.
of being able to act as if. Talk to
right.
our listeners a little bit about, you spoke of, okay, it was scary going into these places and representing
right.
myself, trying to get this job I'm going for, but you had to have a certain amount of just, not just confidence, but sort of gumption on board, Tracy. So
yeah.
talk to our listeners
sure.
a little bit about just the vulnerabilities that you felt doing that. Because I think, you know, when you tell your story, it just sounds so easy. I bet there were some
right.
things that didn't feel easy to you.
Oh my goodness. Absolutely. I mean, just talk about coming out to an environment and I didn't know a single person and it was very scary, you know, and you come to an environment where you don't know a single person and you're out of your element. You know, I grew up in Chicago. You know, this was like maybe my second time to even being in California just in general. And so, you know, you kind of take you get removed so much from your comfort zone and it's very scary, but then you just take a step back and think, okay, breathe, you know, and you look around and you think, okay, I'm the only one who can really control how I'm feeling. And these feelings of nervousness, these feelings of fear and anxiety, I can use these to really help propel me and help really put me into a place that feels good and it feels right. And I think, you know, really understanding those feelings they're always going to happen. You're always going to have some mm-hmm. apprehension or nervousness toward certain elements. I mean, even, you know, I'll give you a great example. I am definitely feeling with Handwritten Wines, we're going to be opening a brand new tasting room in 2 weeks.
Wow.
And let me tell you, it is the most exciting. I'm beaming with excitement because I am.
We can hear it.
You're
yeah. like, I don't even have the words. I'm so excited.
I don't even have the words. Exactly. But let me tell you, there has been a great deal of anxiety along the way. And, you know, obviously I want it to be perfect and so forth. But these are feelings that you have to understand and allow yourself to feel, because I think ultimately they lead you to a good place. And they lead you to really exploring and then utilizing that to make something really come to fruition. And you know, like I said, this new tasting room, it's going to be absolutely fantastic. But you're always going to have those feelings of nervousness or slight fear and so forth. So
Tracy, when you started in the tasting room, so you came mm-hmm. in at the beginning of this operation.
Yeah.
Now you
yeah.
are general manager of this operation.
Right. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about your journey of acting as if to get where you are and what kind
yeah.
of development and, you know, confidence building, and how did you project yourself to keep moving forward?
Yeah. Well, I tell you something, I'll never forget my first day. And, you know, of course, in the Napa Valley, in Yountville in particular, which is where the Jessup Sellers tasting room is, I was very busy. And it was, I started in August. And so it was a hot day, and we had just, I came with so many people in the tasting room, and it was a Saturday. And I literally, I got like thrown to the wolves, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? Oh my gosh, I don't know. Oh, it was so scary. And then, you know, I approached the first tasting that I ever did. And I can tell you guys, the first tasting that I ever did in Jessup Sellers, those club members are still club members today. And it's wow. so oh, cool. And it's yeah. such a neat thing. And they always make fun of me whenever they see me because, you know, I had to walk up to them and I said, listen, we're going to have a fantastic time today, but this is my first day. So you guys, I know you're club members, so you guys can probably help me just as much as I can help you. And so as you kind of turn that around and you take control of the situation, and I knew, oh my gosh, I'm so green when it comes to doing a tasting and so forth, but it's all about really creating that connection with the guest. And that's something that you learn along the way. And I feel like, you know, for me, working at Jessup Sellers, in Handwritten Wines and Humanitas and working for the ownership that I've had the opportunity to work for has been such an incredible, it is the reason why I'm still with the company today.
I think you shared something that was really valuable when you talked about though sharing with the guests that day, your own vulnerabilities, mm-hmm. because sometimes,
yeah.
You know, as much as we can own and say, you know, come out with this, you know, I can handle this, I can do this, I am. But, you know, your willingness and ability to share your own vulnerability was probably a really yeah. key strategy that helped you to get through
yeah.
not just that first right. day, but many of the pieces of right. your work going forward. But, is that true?
But you know right. what I also love about
yeah,
it,
absolutely.
Mel and Tracy, is how you articulated the truth of the matter. Like, you shared a vulnerability, but you also didn't come in saying, listen, it's my first day. Like, I have no idea what's going on. You
right, right.
said, I need to be a certain person in this role right now. Mm-hmm. And to whatever extent I can leverage my whatever confidence right. I'm feeling, I can act as if
right.
without projecting right. myself as being more experienced than I really am. I think that's key.
Right.
And
yeah,
you
yeah.
really did it.
And I think that. Yeah, well, thank you. And I think that was the case when, you know, when I was conducting tastings. And it was also when you're also with the fellow employees, you know, and I think especially for me coming into the tasting room, having never worked in wine before, coming right, you know, basically just from fresh off the boat from Chicago, you know, there's a certain degree of, okay, am I going to get judged? Am I going to, you know, are they going to think less of me because I, you know, don't have the experience or I don't have the extensive wine knowledge? And so walking into that environment, it is, you know, it's, you get nervous. And so you kind of have to turn that around too. And, you know, so with the employees, I said, hey, you guys, I am here. I want to learn everything I possibly can. And so putting yourself kind of in that position to say, teach me, please, you know, teach me about wine, teach me about how you love to do your tastings. How do you, and so if you kind of come at it from that perspective, then sort of the walls come down in terms of the other employees and everyone is so willing and able because they feel like, oh, okay, she wants my help. I can help her. And, you know, so you're not necessarily coming into the environment and saying, this is how I do it. This is how you should do it. You know, it's more or less, teach me. And I think if you have that mentality where, you know, let that person, whether it's the employee or whatever the case may be, let them help you, let them teach you, then those walls come down and you really can start building a great relationship and learn, you know, and it was the truth. I wanted to learn. I wanted to learn everything I possibly could about wine, about, you know, the vineyards. I wanted to suck as much knowledge as I possibly could. And I think for me, for my journey, when I started working in the tasting room, I didn't know, okay, am I going to get into the wine education side of things? Am I going to go down a path to learn and be involved with the vineyard side of things, the production side. And as I kind of made my way along, I realized, wow, I actually really enjoy the business side of things. And I really think it's cool to, you know, kind of learn about how to make this tasting room, you know, for the example, when I first started there, how I really dig it. I really like the idea of how do I make this tasting room function a little bit better and be a little bit more efficient and so forth. And so I realized that that was actually the path that I enjoyed most. And you know, I think that that's kind of case in point to where I've been able to get where I am today. But it takes learning. It takes, again, just being open to really, you know, sucking all that possible knowledge that you can, and utilizing that to figure out kind of ultimately where you want to go and what you want to do.
You know, so Tracy, I think a really important message that you are sending about the importance of, you know, you were really determined and you proceeded. We talk about proceeding until you're apprehended. So, you know, you proceeded, but you also did not bulldog your way into the situation. And you gave this really important tidbit about working with colleagues and being making sure that you're respectful of their knowledge and respectful of what they bring to the table as well, which obviously has positioned you well for your current work that you're doing as a GM, because had you not allowed them their credibility of the knowledge that they currently had with you coming in, that's a really valuable lesson, I think, for all of us, is that, you know, we like to think that we might have to bold our way into any organization to get to the top, but sometimes it's by graciousness along with capability and understanding of getting along with others. It's just as important along the way. And I don't know if you would agree with that, but obviously from what you said, that's what you did.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. And it's really just having a respect for one another. And that's a mutual respect. And it goes so far. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you bulldoze your way into a situation or into an environment, ultimately, I think that creates a little bit more chance for chaos than it does for, you know, again, we really get down to the fact that the relationships are so important in business and in life and truly everything. And those really have to start on a, such a fundamental level. And I think the more open you can be to, again, learning from each other, and I think gracious is such a great word that you used. I mean, if you can just have this graciousness toward one another, it goes incredibly far. And that's, like I said, in terms of just your workplace culture, but so the way we treat each other in the workplace, but then that carries through in terms of your customers and how that ultimately, your success in just every level. Exactly. So
Tracy, you also had a point in your career in this winery where people thought you were ready for the general manager position. And even though you had projected this incredible confidence, you also could assess that I'm not quite ready for that step yet, but I can learn. Talk to our listeners a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. So this was, I want to say three, four years ago. We had an opening for the GM position, and the ownership approached me about taking the position. And, you know, my initial thought was, this could be really incredible. And then my second thought was, you know, this is something I really want. I absolutely want this, but I knew in the back of my mind that I just wasn't ready for it. And so I had this sort of dilemma where I knew I wanted ultimately to be in the position, but I knew I had quite a bit to learn, and I wanted to succeed. I wanted the business to succeed as well. And I felt like, you know, ultimately, if I accepted the position at that time, it just wasn't the right time for me. You know, and I felt like I'm so appreciative that I took the time and sort of was introspective in the sense of understanding where I was at the time. And I ultimately decided and told the ownership that, you know, I absolutely want to go down this path and I will get there. But I told them that I wasn't ready yet. And I think having the acknowledgement, you know, for myself, but then the ownership seeing kind of the process that I went through, they were so appreciative for that fact. And then, you know, obviously a couple of years later, when I did have that, the knowledge and the experience at that point, and I knew it was ready. So the job position became available again. You know, this was about 2-3 years later. And, that was absolutely the right timing. And it felt good. It felt like, oh my gosh, I'm making the right decision. And I went with it. And yeah, it's been absolutely fantastic. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, a lot of times we don't always know how to properly assess. We have another high leverage practice we call What Is, where it's really taking this assessment of your environment and where you're at within that. And so many times it's easy to jump into something that we want so badly without doing a proper assessment of what's going on.
Right.
And you really made, obviously, the right decision for the long term, even though at the time I'm sure it was really tempting. It would have been tempting for anybody to take that because you knew it's what you wanted. But, you know, it's sort of back to what we said, where you really had set yourself on a trajectory of success down the road. But to get there, you knew that there were certain steps you had to take. That's to your credit.
And Tracy, in that, when you were waiting for the next couple of years to end up where you ended up, I would suspect you were also starting to do a lot of acting as if and leveraging that, where you were taking on this accountability and responsibility even beyond what your role was in preparation for being ready to really acquire that GM title. And I mean, did it feel that way to you? Did you feel like, okay, I'm in this
100%.
Spot, but I can start acting as if and start learning? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. It was... You know, I think ultimately being offered the position and knowing I wasn't ready for it, but knowing right then and there that absolutely I wanted it, that put me on that path from that day forward to say, okay, this is where I want to go. This is the position that I absolutely want to be in. How do I get there? How do I, you know, take every little bit again, just really, you know, absorbing every little opportunity to learn and to, you know, obviously educate myself and gain the knowledge and the skills that I needed to actually then step into the position. You're right. It just created a line of focus and once you kind of have that line of focus and you know, okay, this is the end goal. How do I get there? And you can put yourself on that path. It 100% for sure.
Well, Tracy, you're just amazing. And we're so glad. This time has just absolutely flown by. And I'm kind of thinking that Mel and I might have a new friend that we can come out to Napa and you can help navigate us around the Cabernet Sauvignon.
I would love it. There you go.
She's got it down.
Nailed it.
Yeah. So we're going to try to make that happen. Yeah. And so appreciate you helping to illuminate this high leverage practice of as if, because it's possible for every woman to really start thinking through how to think about where I want to be, starting to act as if in the moment, not in an arrogant way, but in trying to acquire new skills that move you closer and closer to where it is you want to be. And your story just illuminates
so
that.
Amazing.
And we can just hear your passion, excitement, in your voice.
Oh,
it's just been delightful to chat with you
thank
today.
You.
To our listeners, we want to just leave you with a question. Are you in a space in your career, in your life, or wherever you're at, where you should be thinking about an as if for you and starting to act as if within that space and acquiring new skills to help you get there to a place that really unlocks your total and true passion? We just want to thank everyone. And also, I want to shout out one more time to Dr. Vance and Jana Thompson for helping us out today with this podcast and believing in us. You have no idea what that means to us as startup entrepreneurs to have people that, you know, have your back and say, keep going. We think what you're up to is really great. And so we want to thank everyone for tuning in to another episode of Influential She. We hope you'll do it again.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our podcast, we'd be so jazzed if you rate us on whatever app you use to find us. And hey, be sure to tell all your friends about Influential She.
And please visit us at InfluentialShe.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you know what? If you come up with a new one, please let us know. In the meantime, remember, stay influential.